Come in, my friend, come in. So glad you made it. Welcome to the Dry Cheers Bar. Why don't you take a seat at my table? The conversation is sometimes coarse, and often misinformed or completely idiotic. But the shine is plentiful, and the regulars are mostly harmless.
I'm Tom. I'm currently drinking a single malt scotch. Started back when I was a kid, but got back into it with Warhammer Fantasy and followed the much lauded path between the death of the old world into Malifaux. And I've played Ten Thunders ever since.
James, hello, or shall I be Jim? Oh, God. I'm going to stick with Jim. There we go, I'm Jim.
I prefer James.
Well, he's an arsehole. I got started with HeroQuest. Followed exactly the same path. Warhammer disappeared, and so I went looking for other things and found Guild Ball and then Malifaux. And I play Guild, Neverborn, and I've just bought a Colette crew, and I really want Molly crew as well. Yeah, so factions. Cool. Oh, and I'm drinking soda water at the moment because I forgot, I didn't get the memo.
Cool. I'm Rich. Started playing probably 40k, played that for probably 5 to 10 years, can't really, like, dropped in and out. Then eventually got a bit sick of dice rolls determining how games went, and that's what got me into Malifaux. Currently playing Outcasts, and I'm eating chicken nuggets.
Hi, I'm Luke. I also got into gaming through HeroQuest, actually, and then sort of moved on to Blood Bowl and Necromunda and other skirmish games. Then I had a really long gap, about a 10-year gap, and came back straight into Malifaux to play Resurrectionists. That's me.
What got you into Malifaux, Luke? Like, why specifically Malifaux as the game you came back to?
It was... Just looking online and seeing the cool art. I think it was actually Seamus.
Yeah.
And Lady Justice, like the artwork. I think it was Death Marshals and Prostitutes. And I was like, what's that?
Yeah, Undead Hook could get a lot of people into this game. A disproportionate amount.
So, are we each going to get a round in? Do we all know what our round is?
I think so.
So just to quickly plug some of the events coming up in the UK. Over the next few weeks. On the 3rd of August, I'm running Tinker Tailor M3E, which is a beginner-friendly tournament. Saturday only, 3 rounds fixed leader. That will be at Darksphere Shepherd's Bush in London. Then the following week, 10th of August, is a Breach in the North at Element Games. On the Sunday the 11th, Avatars Assemble at Impact Wargaming in Sheffield. Saturday 24th to Sunday 25th, there is a two-day tournament, 6 rounds, at Wayland Games. Then you've got Heartfoe on Saturday the 31st of August in York. Then there's the English GT, Saturday 21st of September to Sunday 22nd of September. Again, I'm running that. That is at the Darksphere store in Shepherd's Bush in London. And of course, the other big one coming up is the UK Nationals. That is 9th and 10th of November. That is in Milton Mowbray. All of the details for these tournaments are on the Weird forums, so check them out. Luke, do you want to get the first round in?
Yes, I will. So I want to talk about the current release of M3E, which came out on the 28th of June. Hype about it, and I think all four of us are really excited about it. So just wanted to bring it up and talk about what your experiences of it are so far and what's exciting you. Who would like to go first?
Woo! Yeah! I am stoked. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. I feel like the depth of all the tactics is still there, but it's not hidden behind words that don't make sense quite as much as occasionally the second edition was. So I'm feeling like it's, I can get at the tactics more easily, even if the depth of them is still blowing my mind. which is as it should be. That's what we love about it, right?
Yeah. I think you're right. It's more streamlined, but somehow more depth at the same time. It's easier to pick it up, but I think, so I'm quite a few games in now, but I'm still learning new tricks and finding new things, and it feels really new and fresh, which is great.
Yeah. I think that's part of the thing that excites me about it is I came into second edition round about the Shifting Loyalties was released. So there'd been people been playing for 3 years by the time I came into it. It feels really exciting to be there on the ground floor and experiencing everything new. Someone was asking the other day, oh, which masters get played the most? No idea.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So we did, I went to Dave Brown's event last weekend. I think he posted, I think there was something like 20 players and 18 different masters in round one, which I think sort of goes to show like the success and like the balance of the keywords and actually just good like depth across factions. I'm pretty sure people will inevitably get to a point where it breaks a little bit, but
oh yeah, we'll break it.
Feels like a little journey of discovery because I can't pick between 5 masters at the moment of who I want to play the most, just because they're all so exciting and so different. And I think the keywords brought a lot of subtleties to it, and it's probably made it more accessible, but again, giving it more depth somehow.
Yeah, it's like when I started, I was like, oh, I love the theme of this crew. What should I get with it? And everyone was like, well, you get a doppelganger. Get a doppelganger first.
Yeah.
Then you get this, then you get that. Because those are the models that are in every Neverborn crew, and you don't want to leave home without them. Likewise for Guild. You know, it was just the same models cropping up time and time again, and you just go, oh, okay. So I'm loving the thematic element to it. And yeah, someone's going to break something. But at the same time, I think it's easier for them to fix that as well.
Yeah, yeah, it will definitely help that out.
Just the fact that everything's online means they can do erratas and updates easier.
Yeah.
It always sucks when your cards become no longer correct, but at least it can be done. It can be fixed if it needs to be done.
Yeah. What I find really exciting is people are asking, like, who's the best master and what's the best crew to take with master X and Y? And you're seeing, like, 10 different responses, and it does like feel like a bit of time of discovery in Malifaux. So it's the game that we all love, but like a new and interesting time.
Yeah, I'm really liking how at the moment, you know, in second edition we all kind of, and you sort of stuck to them, but with the keyword hiring system, it feels like you don't have to necessarily stay in faction anymore, because it, you know, if you want to play, say, Marcus crew, you just have. Actually, that's a bad example because he's 2 factions. But, you know, if you just wanted to play Colette, you could just pick up all the performer keywords and go and play as Arcanist. You don't have to invest heavily in the faction. You can just invest in the keyword.
And that's exactly what I've got and done. I've bought Colette and all crew.
Jim will end up owning everything, just one master from each faction at a time.
Well, look, I cabaret is my thing. It's what I do when I'm not painting models. So I had to have Colette. It was inevitable. What I did find though, so take my guild, right? I got loads of guild models, and I've got guild models from across the entire faction, all the different keywords. I did not have a single keyword where I had all of the models. So it's been a bit of a, I've got to completely, like, I've got to buy new models. That's easily done. I do that whenever I wake up by accident, usually. But that's been a real experience as well, actually, that trying to rebuild and, you know, refocus on actual thematic groups. Did you guys find that, or you just own the entire damn faction anyway?
I own the whole faction.
Since the beta got released, and I was like, oh, I want to play all of these, I just went out and bought every box set for every keyword and every model that affiliated with it. So I'm all set. Got loads of things on sprues.
Yeah. I mean, I own pretty much all of the 10 Thunders faction. In these last couple of weeks, I've been picking up the remainder of the Foundry, so the Metal Golem, as it's now called, and the Survivors, which didn't even realise they were in the... I must have realised at some point during the beta that they were part of the Foundry keyword.
They seem good.
Yeah, they seem really good. Like, I remember people complaining about them in the beta, and I wonder if nobody bothered to stop complaining, because I look at them for 5 points and go, that seems a bit good. So, yeah, hopefully I'll get some of those on the table next weekend.
Yeah, so lots of new models to paint up. If only there were a way that I could paint up lots and lots of models quickly. Nice.
Did you just
segue?
Have you finished your drink, Jim? Are you trying to get the next round in?
No, I'm just foreshadowing, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, excitement for me on third edition as well. I am the henchman for Darksphere, and so last weekend I was running a casual weekend of gaming and just people dropping in and leaving as they do. And there was quite a few faces that I maybe haven't seen playing Malifaux in the last 12 to 18 months. I've seen a few of those people coming back and showing interest and really enjoying it as well. And a few completely new faces as well. And then Luke's face, obviously, because...
No one needs to see that, though.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, I think that's cool. You see a lot of names and faces that you might not know the people, but there's a lot of names that I recognize from like a weird place that disappeared for a long time. So I kind of joined sort of midway through M2E and I remember seeing some names at the start and now seeing and hearing those names again, people coming back, people from Darksphere that have stopped playing seem to be paying some attention and actually like new people. There's a lot of excitement and a big buzz. And I think the fact that a lot of places have sold out of the cards they've got is a good sign. It looks like there's a lot of people out there wanting to play Malifaux. I think it's kind of a case of finding each other and actually getting the games in and like making the effort to go out and meet the people, play the games.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of people on the forums coming back and saying, oh, I haven't played since first edition. Coming back for the third edition, which is cool.
Have we all talked out about how excited we are for M3E?
I feel like we should be more excited. That feels like very short.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely am. But I feel like I've listened to so much podcasts talk about excitement for third edition.
Yeah, you might be right.
Not a lot to say generally. Like, you know, we can't really go into all the things that have changed because loads of podcasts have done that already.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point in repeating it.
What I may do is grab myself that gin and tonic quickly so that I'm on brand.
Yeah, let me get another beer and then I'm good to go.
Rich, just want to, you know, suck the juice out of a chicken nugget.
I've already done that too. I'm actually going to get some gin.
Okay. Yay, we're all alcoholics. So, Jim, your round.
My round. Yeah, well, so I've got a lot of new models I've got to paint all of a sudden because I did the thing that you're supposed to do and bought a doppelganger and then other random bits like a Waldgeist and a few other bits that you're supposed to pick up. And then I discovered I didn't really have any crews in Keyword. So lots and lots of painting to do. And all of a sudden Games Workshop go, hey, here's a thing. You can just slap this paint on and it does all your shading and highlighting for you. Promises magical things. So I thought I'd have a little test, try and blitz paint some of the stuff I've really got to catch up on and see how this new magical stuff is. Anyone else tried it yet?
I've tried it. I went to a store to try it out and yeah, I was pretty impressed. I think it's a mixed bag. Some of them are a bit fluorescent. I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. Some have blown my mind though, and I've bought 2,000 points of Iron Jaws for a tournament in August because some of the guys in dropping out of Malifaux towards the end of M2E weren't particularly interested in testing out the beta. And in that time, they had to fill the void. So they filled it with Age of Sigmar. So it'd be nice to get some games with those guys. But yeah, that means buying 2,000 points of Iron Jaws and now looking at 40 something models that I've got to paint in 3 weeks. So contrast is something that's very interesting to me right now.
And you're well known for not painting.
Oh yeah, anything. I'm well known for like mass painting. Yeah.
So I agree with you. Some of the contrast paints are absolutely fantastic. They can become staples. Some of them I'm not convinced by yet. There's a few that seem not quite to do anything, but I'm discovering. Let's take an example here. I tried to paint my Exorcist. Nice and quick, you know, loads of coat on him. There's most of the model is coat. So I'm going, okay, let's try this. Which one was it? The Griff Charger Grey, whatever a Griff Charger is. And it didn't really do anything. It sort of had this sort of vague bluish grey. And then I painted Basilicanum Grey over the top of it. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, it gives it a tint. So it doesn't work on its own, if I'm honest. It doesn't really work for me at all on its own. So what it did was it gave me a slightly different tinge. You know how a lot of the, Malifaux artwork, they have this sort of, especially the gilt stuff, has a lot of grey coats on, but it's not grey. It's a sort of greeny bluey.
Yeah.
Grey, and it's a colour that I haven't been able to match before. And honestly, this is the closest I've come to doing it with just two coats of slightly different contrast greys.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I think there's a lot of experimenting with things that we're going to suddenly go, ah, now I see where that one makes sense. I think the green as well, there's a sort of glowy warpstone green one, which I think on its own might not do much. But if you put in like an undercoat of yellow or a bright green, then I think that's going to really transform it. I'm going to test that.
So some of the little videos I've seen, people painting stuff with metallics and then painting the contrast over like a silver. That's some great effects. So I just did that today
On the Scales of Justice. I've never painted the Scales of Justice before, despite Legs of Justice being one of my main masters, because the Scales of Justice weren't great in second edition. Painted on the metals and then used sort of some of the black and the wildwood, dark brown there, to really like heavily rust it up and then just pick out some sharp highlights afterwards. Worked lovely. And a massive shout out to the reds. The two red paints are fantastic. I've always been crap at painting red, so just slap on a coat of the flesh tearer stuff and you're done. Love it.
Tom, any interest to you?
Are you
a purist?
No. Okay. I've given them a quick tryout with a couple of colours again in a store, just slapping a bit of paint onto a random model. It's not the best way to try it out. I think these are a great thing. Anything that gets people painting their miniatures is going to be good. Can't deny that. And I've seen a lot of very good painters using them in very technical ways. In essence, as far as I can work out, this is basically, it's a base coat with a wash that they've somehow managed to mix together such that it separates and does its thing.
Like a glaze?
Is that how a glaze works?
Kind of. They have more pigment than
the glaze is a wash, isn't it? Weak ink.
I mean, they are a good thing. I do not see myself picking them up. The main reason being that I cannot stand GW paint pots.
That's a very specific thing, Tom.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that, please, for the listeners?
Yeah. Once you go to dropper pots, you don't go back. How many GW paint pots do you have lying around with paint coked up? Caking up all of the inside rim. Coked up as well, probably.
Coked up, caking the rim.
Yeah, that would be the way I get my crew painted.
Yeah, sorry.
Coked up, get it done.
Yeah.
I've thrown away more Games Workshop paint pots than I thought I'd even bought, to be honest. I keep finding just dried up Games Workshop paint pots everywhere. So, yeah, I feel your pain, and also they're quite annoying because you open the lid and you want to get the brush in there, but they keep closing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't seem to be a good way to hold them open. So, yeah, they're a bit irritating, but...
And I know you can...
The fact that this evening, I painted the Scales of Justice and a Wardgeist in an hour, and I'm really happy with how they've come out. Now, anyone who knows me will know that the Scales of Justice would have taken me 4 months before. Mm-hmm. I'll accept some minor niggles over the paint pots.
Yeah.
How easy were they to use? Because that one of the things that they're kind of marketed at beginner painters, but they don't look that easy to use to me. Like you know, because they're...
Yeah, I tell you what, before you answer that, Jim, we have a group chat for this podcast, and Jim has been posting photos of the stuff that he's been painting since he picked up these contrast paints. And you posted a couple of models today that looked superb. Really good. And there is a definite difference between that and the first models you tried the paints on.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
There is still definitely a learning curve with these paints. I think that's fairly clear.
You've got to understand how paint flows. I think that's fine.
The good thing about them is you paint a model so quickly that it won't take you that long to actually get good with them. I think the hard part is actually having all these models to try it out on, which I'm sure most people have probably got some Hormigants or something kicking around their past days of GW that you can just spray up and test some stuff out really, really quickly. I think my gripe with them, of all my gripes, is they hyped it so much and it's such a good product. They sold out fucking everywhere and it's almost impossible to get hold of them. So as great as they are, not great if you can't actually buy them. That's a bit of a...
I think they're sorting that out fairly quickly. So a lot of the ones that I couldn't get hold of at first, I've got hold of since. So yeah, I don't think they quite anticipated.
They didn't believe that
they were going to sell.
Same thing Weird has done with their third edition release stuff, in fairness. They thought that was going to be months worth of stock and it flew off the shelves in days.
You wonder, are they genuinely not expecting that much? Is there an element of, if you sell out instantly, then people go, wow, I don't know, who knows? It creates a demand, perhaps.
Jim, have you ever been onto a gamers forum or Facebook group? People don't go, wow, it's sold out.
No.
We're so impressed that you sold out. We're very happy you as a company.
Okay. I concede that point. So I'm still waiting for the white paint. Because if somebody can make a white paint where I just have to paint on one coat, I'm going to be so happy.
I tell you what, I might be in with you on that one.
Just decant it from the pot, Tom, and put it in a different pot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I would be willing to do it for a white that just works. Possibly a yellow.
I appreciate it.
Oh, the yellows look good. Both yellows, I've tested both of them out, and they are excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had 2,000 points of Iron Jaws to paint up, I would 100% be picking up the green skin and whatever sort of my main colour was. I have a lot of stuff to paint, but a lot of it is very individual, and I enjoy taking my time over my painting. I enjoy using different washes with different base coats and different highlights and playing about with that stuff.
Well, I think with Malifaux specifically, because of the nature of the crews and the nature of the sculpts, being really beautiful sculpts and very individual, it's not like batch painting. You do want to take your time over each particular one and make them look really nice. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd use them for Malifaux, although I don't necessarily think it's like a revolutionary new way of painting anyway. You know, there's always been ways of batch painting, you know, like Army Painter do the kind of colored primers, and you can paint on base coats, use their dip, which comes out very glossy, spray it. So I don't know. I'm not sold on them, but, I hold up my hands. I haven't actually used them yet. So I'm going to kind of reserve judgment. I'm going to give them a try. I think, for me, they'll probably be like very niche uses for them. Like I'll probably, you know, like Rich was saying about painting the metal and then putting them over the top to give a kind of colored metal. I think that would be a really interesting way of using them.
Yeah, they're not going to replace my normal paints. I'm not throwing away all my old stuff, but they are really great at getting a load of color on quick, and they can do some really interesting things. I'm looking forward to painting up the Pandora crew because I'm thinking the Sorrows with some of those, as you say, luminous type ones. I think I can get some good effects out of that.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yes, I was painting Goryeo all day and I didn't have...
I'm not surprised after what they did to me in our recent go.
Yeah, yeah. I thought if I'm going to kill Jim's stuff with them, they need to look really nice.
They need to look fabulous while they do it. Yeah, that's the rule.
Yeah, of course. So So yeah, I didn't have contrast. I've got a black here, but that's about it. But I was thinking while I was doing it, on the Goyo would look really good with contrast paints because it would give it that sort of ethereal look, maybe. Have you found some of the brighter colors?
That'd be really good. I'm hoping for like all my void creatures, because contrary to what you think, Luke, I used to quite enjoy painting, and what broke me was trying to layer up my void creatures like a couple of years ago, and that sort of was the end of my hobby, and I've never really got back into painting since, because it was like this I was trying to layer up from black to like a vibrant turquoise, and it just, each one had taken me hours and hours. And what was fascinating about these contrast paints and sort of soil destroying is I achieved the effect that probably took me 20 hours on my Nothing Beast on a GW model in about 10 seconds. That was gut wrenching. But that's another good, like, it's good that they're out, and I think they're a good tool for certain things.
Yeah. Well, anything that makes rich painters' models is a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
We did briefly talk about how good you need to be at painting to use them and how much they are for beginners. And I think there is an element to which you've got to understand how paint flows. You've got to be able to put it on reasonably quick because they're not slow drying. You've got to be able to get it on quick so that you don't get lines in it, you know, where it's dried and then you've painted the next section. And you've got to be able to get it on, hopefully, without splashing it all over the last section you painted. So,
yeah, that's really the bit that looks tricky to me.
Yeah, you've got to know how much paint to have on that brush, right? You put too much on, splash, it's everywhere, right? You put too little on, and you're not getting the effect that is the whole point of the damn things. So, I don't think it's a beginner's painting as much away as they thought it might be, but then you can still learn with it.
Do you think it might teach people bad habits?
Is there a worse habit than playing games for 35 years with all grey and metal models?
No, there is not.
Well, that's what I've been doing. I mean, not all grey, but seriously, yeah. It's not a bad starting point, and if people stick with contrast and that gets all of their stuff painted, then that's pretty good as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to win any awards with it, but
I think like having painted minis on the table is important. Do you know what? I'm not going to rant about it. I was just about a massive rant there, but no, I'm not. But yeah, anything that gets painted minis on the table is going to be a good thing. So.
And I think we're going to see some really good painters get some amazing effects out of this. So
yeah.
Looking forward to seeing some of that and to hopefully doing some of it myself. Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Sorry, I've done a lot of talking on this. Well, that's largely because I've been the only one who's been blitz painting with contrast paints. I was going to very quickly say something that actually cropped up, because I very early on said Dark Oath Flesh is crap. Don't buy it. And I completely go back on that statement. What I had done was used it on a model that didn't have a good base coat on it, didn't have a good smooth base coat, and as a result it just went brown all over, and it's I think a particularly difficult one to use well, but it's also what I used on the Scales of Justice, if you have a look, and that flesh color came out just fine.
Oh really? That was that color?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And if you look back at the journalists that I sent through, it was one of the first models I'd done using Dark Oath Flesh. It basically came out brown because it wasn't able to spread into the corners because the base coat was not smooth enough. It basically came out as brown flesh, but not good, not with highlighting or anything. So I thought, oh, this is completely wrong. But no, key to it, get a good base coat. And of course, they released two base coats specifically for that. So,
I guess you can use any light colored primer, though, right?
Probably, but honestly, the two that they've released specifically for it, the Grey Seer and the Wraithbone, they do seem to work really well. They come out with really nice smooth.
Because I use Tamiya Fine Surface Primer. Have you ever used that?
Nope, but I suspect it's just fine.
Yeah, it's a really nice, fine, light grey primer.
Cool. So I need to nominate someone, do I?
Yeah, please.
Well, I'll nominate you then, Tom.
My round.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Here's what I'm bringing to the table. We have all taken our first steps into the other side. I have been championing the game quite heavily locally. We've got a nice little small community, but you've all at least had a demo from me. And then we've had a Tides of Battle slow grow campaign. And we had our first tournaments. What was that, a month ago? Yeah. Exactly a month ago from when we were recording. And I'm interested to hear how you guys are finding the game and finding the transition and whether you, and how that fits in with your other gaming commitments.
I love the other side so far. I wasn't part of the Kickstarter. The kind of, when it was, the Kickstarter was advertised, I looked at it and went, no, it looks okay. I'm concentrating on Malifaux and I've got a lot of other stuff going on. So I ignored it and then it was released. I don't know if this is true, but bullied me into a demo. I don't think it is actually. I think I probably are.
That sounds true.
it's probably not true.
Still been a bully.
Maybe it was just the way he looked at me. Maybe it was kind of he bullied me with his eyes.
To put this in context, both Luke and Rich, after they took a demo from me, walked away from the table and bought the starter set.
Yeah.
I may well have bullied you into the demo, but I didn't bully you into buying the models.
Well, it's honest. You know, when I did the demo, I was surprised at how what a nice feeling game it was. It was the rules are similar to Malifaux but different. Very streamlined, very I don't want to use the word simple because they're not, but they're just well thought out. And the game plays really smoothly. It's extremely enjoyable. The minis and the art look great. I think it could, a lot of people are calling for an errata at the moment because there are a few things in it that are causing a negative play experience for some people. But yeah, I love it. It's kind of, I think it would be doing better if it didn't sort of clash with the release of edition, because it's kind of been overshadowed by that at the moment. And, you know.
Yeah, it was supposed to be out a bit sooner, wasn't it? And therefore a bit more breathing space between it and the excitement of third edition.
Yeah. I think the Kickstarter was delayed a year in the end, more or less.
Was it a year?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So had it come out at the original point it came out, or within the next sort of 6 months or so, when M2E was still going strong, there would have been a lot of the game that would have, a lot of people looking at those sections of the shelves that would have picked it up, I think. And it would have covered weird for this sort of period between second edition and third edition. Because it came out that extra sort of 6 months later, I do feel like a lot of people had drifted away from Malifaux at that point.
Yeah, I think it just lost momentum.
Yeah. And so this game was released into a vacuum, it felt like at times.
I think it'll be interesting to see, because with the rise of M3E, people suddenly getting back into Word and back into their products. Mm. I think you might see it starting to pick up again. Everyone will remember like how great a rule set those guys can write, and actually might start paying some more attention. On the flip side though, they might do what I'm doing and get so heavily into M3E that they kind of forget the other side exists, which is to my shame.
Well, I think there are new releases planned for the other side as well.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And I think as Kyle was saying that they're going to give it a lot of attention.
But
it's not being left by the wayside. It's just, I think they weird have their hands full with M3E at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking forward to seeing some of that, especially as I'm imagining that the new factions are still going to, you're going to have the option to have an envoy from them. Yeah. So you'll have, you know, the envoys from the envoy. I don't know, envelope, whatever, from the guild. into my King's Empire won't just mean one model, it's gonna mean a few more, which as a guild player in Malifaux I'm looking forward to getting some of their actual units on the table, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a good way to get some hype about it as well, is like, that's how they can leverage M3E and get some of that interest that people have got in the factions and like splash that then into the other side.
Yeah. Including Sonya Crid, potentially.
Yeah.
The rumor. And,
Not potentially. We've seen artwork for a 2-player starter box with Sonya Crid versus Kirai.
Yeah.
What? When did that happen?
Haven't you seen that?
No.
Oh, it's got, it's a Court of Two versus Guild starter box, Kirai and Sonya Crid. the models all look pretty cool. Sonya Crid's got some like wizardy mage people with her.
Okay.
Karai's got like Akirio, who's in a big hockey mask thing. They're all in masks, the Court of Two. It looks incredible.
I mean, we've had a few people locally that have sort of, when I've done demos, they've gone, I'm really interested, but I'm interested in Guild, Court of Two, Three Kingdoms, Kimon, basically the stuff I showed them at the back of the rule book. And you go, okay, that's fair enough. This stuff is coming. I know it's coming, but I can't sell you on this just yet.
So some of the people I've spoken to about it, because I've been trying to get into it as well, have the two main reasons why I'm hearing people aren't into it is the first one is that not enough people are playing it, which is a kind of weird chicken and egg situation, you know.
Yeah. Self-fulfilling prophecy, yeah.
But I do get it, you know. They don't want to invest money into a game that maybe they're not going to play, or they don't feel is going to get played that much. The second reason is a lot of people saying, well, I don't want to play an army game, which it isn't. It's not anything on the scale of 40k or anything like that. You know, it's what, 50 models for a 2-commander game? 50, 60?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, I would say, yeah. 50 is probably about right. Yeah. And actually that 50 models is only usually about 8 activations as well.
Yeah. Cause they act as, you know, which is one of the other great things about it. The plug bases are amazing. It doesn't feel to me like an army game. It just feels like a large skirmish game.
It's a nice in between, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think all of us started with the big games, 40k, Warhammer, you know, aside from things like Hero Quest and so on, you know, those big games. And honestly, do any of us have time for that anymore? My main game became Guild Ball when I moved away from, Warhammer. Bit of a plug there for Guild Ball because it is magnificent. And
Tom's editing that out. As we speak, Tom's editing that out.
Yeah.
Henchman won't allow that.
So he was, he's henchman for Malifaux. I was, what was I?
You're a pundit, Jim.
A pundit. I was a pundit for Guild
Ball. Obviously a station very close to your heart.
It really was. I've just had some gin, so I've forgotten everything that's ever happened. But
what is a pundit?
So it's a henchman for Guild Ball.
Yeah, but what does the word mean? Is what I'm asking.
Pundit, it's like one of these.
You're not a sports fan, are you, Luke?
No, not really.
When you've got a football match on the telly and there's someone talking about the football match and going, well, you know, what you should have done is kick the ball in the goal.
Like a commentator.
That's a pundit. I can't do accents.
Like a commentator, but not when the game's on.
Oh, yes. Right. Okay.
The people before the game and during the halftime.
Quality content here, guys.
Yeah.
So is that
proper massive tangent.
Is that what you... No, I just want to know what you did, James. So as a pundit, do you show up at people's games and talk about them afterwards?
Yeah. Just talk about the players, not about the game. Just that guy's a right.
Well, if he'd moved his guy over here, he would have probably scored
immediately after the activation. That'd be great.
Yeah. What the hell was my train of thought on this?
I don't know.
I was talking about it because I'd gone from playing Warhammer to playing Guild Ball. And that was like from having 200 models in my army to having 6 in my team. And I got a regular opponent used to play against. And the number of times I'd go over to his house, we'd play a Warhammer game. And sort of 2 hours in, his girlfriend would pop upstairs and say, oh, who's winning? And we'd say, oh, we haven't finished setting up yet. It was like 2... 2 hours in, we're still doing the terrain setup and deploying our models. And yeah, Guild Ball was a revelation because, oh, hold on a second. All of a sudden, those extremely rare bits of free time we're actually playing games with. And I think what's good about the other side, see, there was a point to it. What's good about
that remains to be seen. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's good about the other side is it sort of fits. You can still deploy that pretty damn quickly, right? You can get those bases out. You can start slapping the models on. You've not got that issue of, you know, massive deployment, but you've still got that slightly grander scale, especially when you've got the Titans in there. It real fit, really gets a bit more of a grander epic feel to it.
Yeah.
So it's a lovely little in-between thing. And those 3 model bases, 5 model bases, avoid the problem of 40K, where you're like, okay, this is a much quicker skirmish game. We're not having to rank models up and everything, but oh God, I've got to move the 150 models individually across the battlefield. So yeah, so it's a lovely little bit of work, actually. Quite fun.
Has your Titan killed anyone yet?
My Titan?
Hmm.
This is the King's Hand.
Yeah.
Yes, or the King's Sacrificial Lamb, in Jim's sake.
Yeah, my Titan has never done anything. My King's Hand has never achieved a single thing in the 6 or 7 games I've used it in. It has, perhaps that's not fair, because what it has done is absorbed quite a lot of fire and occasionally left the rest of my army reasonably unscathed. But for all of the times I've shot it at the enemy, I've never done a single bit of damage to them. Incidentally, sorry, I've gone, I think it's gin, I've just gone talky.
This is great.
Incidentally, have 4 of us each got one of the different...
I think we do, yeah.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
So I've got King's Empire. Luke, you've got some really nice-looking Cult of the Burning Man guys coming along.
Yep.
Got some gibbering hordes.
Yeah, they had the box yet, Rich.
Yeah, no, they're not. Every now and then I... out and I hold Carcanoi in my hand. I'm like, this is beautiful, and I put it back in and put it away and pretend I never bought it.
Get some contrast paints. You'll be able.
I'm gonna. They're destined for some red and bone contrast paint, I think.
They'd probably be a really good the gibbering hordes.
Yeah,
would be a really good candidate for contrast paints.
Yeah,
and Tom's got your Abyssinia, which is probably why you don't want contrast paints, because it's all metal.
Yes, although I am thinking it's what, sorry.
That and the pots.
The pots, yeah. Yeah, this is basically it. Metal and pots, and that's enough to take me off contrast paints. Yes, I've got nearly everything for Abyssinia, and I've got a bit of Cult of the Burning Man, which I use for demos as well.
I went and got Cult of the Burning Man as well, because I'm an idiot.
Mm.
They're really nice sculpts, the cult. And they're
what they did.
They're kind of... I think they have... the most individual sculpts in them, don't they? I think you get...
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. My King's Empire Rifleman, it's like the same 3-4 models over and over again, and then the cult is just like all manner of weird, gribbly strangeness. Well, which, as someone who played Chaos for 30 years in Warhammer, I was like, oh, gribbly weirdness, I'm having that.
Most squads are of 9 people, and it's 5 different sculpts, so you've got duplicates of 4 of them.
Whereas the cult have 9 different sculpts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So we had the Battle of London last month, which was the first, I think it's still actually in the world, the only 2-commander full-scale tournament.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I've seen people talking about tournaments, 2-commander tournaments on the forums before.
Let him have this moment. Let him have this moment.
Yes. It was, to my knowledge, the first one. If someone has beat me to it, by all means, let me know, and I will give you full credit for that. But as far as I know, 15th of June that was. But yeah, there's been now 2 tournaments in the UK. Ross ran one up in, round near Derby. And then we've run this 2-commander, which was, I think, a good success. Luke, was, fortunate enough to win that tournament.
Yep.
Yeah. And Jim managed to avoid the wooden spoon on a technicality.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Go me.
But there is a little bit of a community in the UK. There's a, Facebook Messenger chat with a few of us in.
Is there?
Yeah, do you want me to add you to it?
Do you think?
I'm not in that either.
No, you're not. I was going to ask you about that. It's not of my design. I got added in by Dave Brown. So there is a chat about it, and that since the tournament we had 7 people turn up, but there seems to be a bit more buzz about it again and people talking. I've actually, and I'll announce exactly what my plans are now, since we've got Luke, who is the winner of the only full-scale, full-size other side tournament.
Woo!
And
technically make Luke the best player in the world.
That does make me that.
I think it does.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is, Dan, who came second at the Battle of London, was claiming to me that he was UK number one because he's been to both UK tournaments and podiumed at both. So, I've come up with a cunning little plan. I'm going to get Luke and Dan to play off against each other, and the winner will win a medal, the Medal of Honour. Now, there is a website that is currently under construction called thehonorside.webs.com. That is honour spelt the American way, H-O-N-O-R. And basically,
Yeah.
I had to do it because that's the name of the upgrade. But
yeah.
Yeah. So the idea is when I can get Dan and Luke to play off against each other, the winner will take this medal, and then every time they're going to play a game, they're going to have to put this medal on the table. And there's a code on the medal for you to, when you win, if you win the medal, you register that you are now the holder of the Medal of Honour, and we can hopefully track it across the UK, and hopefully it will go abroad and it'll go all over the place, and we'll have this fantastic story of tracing, like a boxing belt. It has to be up there, and it has to be a thing. In lieu of any sort of rankings or anything, I thought it would be a fun way to.
Yeah, this sounds amazing.
Yes.
Let's do it. So who has it now? Is that me?
No. So
the greatest other side player the world has ever seen.
Yeah. So that's why I'm going to get you and Dan to play off against each other. So whoever wins will take the medal. So I'm going to have to get my arse moving on this.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely up for that.
We may have to go up to them in the Midlands to do it, but I'll come up with you for a road trip if that's how it goes. You good with that?
Okay. Yeah, I'm up for that.
Cool. I just thought it'd be a fun way to, as I say, in lieu of rankings, we'll have a championship medal that travels around and goes to wherever. And every time you play a game, you've got to put the medal on the table and go, if you win, you take this medal.
I feel like I'm in Rocky.
Yeah.
Really shit Rocky.
Yeah, okay. I'm like Sylvester Stallone, and Dan's like that Russian guy. He's like shit talking me and stuff, and I've got to.
Ivan Drago.
I've got to train.
Give yourself a montage.
Yes, we need a montage video.
We'll put on Eye of the Tiger. And
yeah.
I'll train.
Flipping cards.
Yeah.
Painting models really slowly. Got the Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, amazing.
That's what I've got planned on the other side. I do think it's got a bright future. I hope more people get into it. We've got a nice little community.
The tournament was really fun. There was only a small number of us, but everyone had a really good time. The only thing is like with the game times, did we do 2:15 or 2.5 hours?
2:15, I think.
2:15. I think with 2 command of the games, I don't know if it's because people are just new to it, but not a lot of games. Did any games get to turn 5?
Yes.
Okay.
1. I think 2:15 is the time to aim for. I don't regret doing that. I think it is doable in 2 minutes 15. 2 hours 15.
It's doable within 2 minutes 15 if you've got the Rhino.
Yeah. You both look at each other's lists and go, no, you win. 2 hours 15, it's doable. I think the community is not there yet.
No.
There's too many, what does this do? What does that do?
Yeah, rules checking and, yeah.
Yeah, and I particularly found, so I think I managed to get to a turn 3 at one point. What I found was King's Empire in particular, they want to, in turn 1 and probably turn 2, be taking advantage of that extra range. So they want to be doing some killing, so that once things get up a bit close and personal, they hopefully outnumber the enemy and they've gone to glory. And then they can start scoring their points. Now, I'm sure there's ways around that. In fact, Ross Baker showed me there were ways around that in the King's Empire Mirror match where he went and nabbed a load of points early on and beat me. But at the same time, my concern is that the factions that can grab those objective points early, those 50 points early, are going to really benefit from that.
So what I've seen from my games as Cult of the Burning Man is Cult tend to, I think tournaments do favour them because they tend to score a lot of their points early and get a really big lead in the first couple of turns. And then through attrition, they kind of lose points towards the end. So I think like tournament play definitely benefits them. I'm not saying that's why I won. No, I did. I trained hard.
It's totally why you won.
It's not why I won. I trained.
It's also not why I lost. I lost because I was crap.
I played a lot of practice games before that to get, and I got my my garrison honed. They were like a well-oiled machine of death. But yeah, I think I did have an advantage points-wise. Saying that, Dan was playing Gibbering Hordes, who were technically win by attrition over the course of a longer game, but he came second. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's an advantage, I think. It's not a something that's going to mean that every winner of every tournament is Cult of the Burning Man.
No.
And this, when we're talking about the round times, I want to keep that pressure on. I don't want it to be a comfortable, you know, if I said, okay, it's now 3 hours and I feel like you should be pushing to get there.
You should be. And I kind of feel like we could go to, say, I don't know, maybe you could start at 3 hours and each new tournament is quarter of an hour less.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get there.
I think, wasn't David talking about a grow tournament? So you start, first game would be one commander, second game one commander plus 10 script, and then the final game a two commander. That I think that might be quite interesting up for a tournament.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's certainly something he was talking about. And yeah, that would be an interesting way. I kind of wanted Battle of London to be sort of my flagship event. We're running events in London. The main key point of the fluff is the Battle of London. It seemed like I have to do this. I have to make this a big event. And so I'm hoping to run it again next year. It'll still be in June. And for it to grow and get bigger. I totally agree with what you were saying, Jim. We could have done it probably 3 hours then, but then we wouldn't have got the whole day in. My aim is to get to 215, so I do probably want to run something else, maybe end of this year, early next year, and make that a bit of a softer event, if that makes sense. I'm not sure how yet, but...
I think something sort of more, not a tournament, potentially, like a scenario-based, you know, gaming day, something a bit more casual. But I don't know. Maybe that's not a draw for other people.
That's not a bad idea.
I'd be up for that. That sounds
I think if it's more casual, as someone who's sort of on the fence about getting more involved in it, that's probably more appealing. Because I don't think the tournament scene sounds like it's not necessarily there yet.
True.
And actually sort of a more casual, organized fun day where you can just come down and play a game over a couple of hours with people who want to play it, as opposed to, you know, trying to squeeze as many games in and them only being two or three turns, probably is maybe a bit more appealing to more people at the moment.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and I mean, as I did the other week with the M3E, I did the same with the other side when that had its official launch. Just had a weekend of come down, have a demo, play it out, and a few people got the game then. That is definitely where I could go and do a refresher. I think maybe I would want to hold on until we get some new stuff out, maybe. Things like the Guild and stuff. I think there's a lot of people that would be interested in that. One thing I was thinking, actually, this plays into the idea of maybe like more of a scenario-type day. Because I like the idea of you're playing maybe like a one-commander game, and then based on your position on the table, you get thrown into a doubles game, but with someone that you're essentially based on your position in the table sort of thing.
Nice, yeah.
Something like that would be fun. Or going into 3 and 4 player games, something a bit completely different. So yeah, maybe a scenario would be good.
One of the things I really like about... plug for Guild Ball again. One of the things I really like about going to Guild Ball tournament is you might get absolutely hammered in your first game, but because of the Swiss pairing system that it uses, you can pretty much guarantee that after the first game or two, you're playing against people who are at least a reasonably comparable level to yourself. So you're really starting to get some good, close games where you're both in with a chance of winning.
You've not been to a Malifaux tournament yet, have you, Jim?
Not a full-on one, no. I've been to a couple of sort of events, one that Pete ran, the old...
Rebels.
And, one that you ran, but I think it was... One of them was Henchman Hardcore. I think one was a proper tournament, but I wasn't a proper tournament player at it.
But Malifaux tournaments work in the same way. They work with the Swiss pairing, so... You may get a horrendous matchup first round, but usually your second round is okay, unless you lose 8-0 to a former UK number one and then find out that the guy who drove you there beat the current UK number one 8-0, and you're now playing you've gone from a former UK number one to the current UK number one, and you're just getting smashed all over the place.
This sounds awfully specific. I'm feeling some real pain there.
I don't feel any pain at all.
He just needs to up his game.
Sorry?
Just needs to up his game.
Rich, you're round.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. So, with all the hype of M3E, I want to know, who is your favourite master currently and why? I'm going to go to Luke first.
Does it have to be one? I have two.
It has to be one.
Has to be one.
Commit. Yeah.
Okay, if I have to commit to just one, it's going to be Jackdaw. I've been playing him. I think I've played him for my last 10 games or so. So I've always loved Jackdaw as a character, and the models looked amazing. And in 2E, I really wanted to buy him, but I looked at his stats and stuff and was like, oh, it's not really my sort of thing. Plus it would mean I'd have to invest and I didn't want to do that. So I kind of just put it aside. And then when third edition was announced and he was declared that it was coming to Rezzers, I got really excited and I went out and bought the box straight away and painted it up straight away because I wanted to do that for so long. Gameplay wise, he hasn't been disappointing at all. He's super fun to play. It's not an easy master to play, and it's very much like you have to get his kind of grindy machine going. And if you don't, you're going to lose. But, when it works, it's lots of fun.
Yeah, and having been like the victim of it a couple of times, I think once you fall into that big bubble of death, like you just don't get out of it.
No.
He's one of those masters, I think, if you don't know what he does going into it or have like a vague understanding of sort of how you can avoid him, I think you're probably going to lose the first time. If you go in swinging, you're probably losing to Jack, I think.
Yeah, once those curse upgrades start spreading out amongst the opposing crew, and his personal curse upgrade, which gives you staggered during the start phase, once you've got a load of that out, it just really slows down the other crew.
So are you not finding, so you said you played the last 10 games with him, are you not finding some more challenging than others? Because he definitely feels like a specialist.
Yeah, he's definitely like the one I've struggled most with him in is Corrupted Idols.
Yeah.
Just because it's a slow crew. But yeah, he really struggles to get to certain areas of the board. So, you know, if the markers are coming in, I think it was against you, Rich. We played Tara, versus Jack on Vassal. Yeah,
Jack's not winning that matchup.
No, and I just
Corrupted Idols.
Like, you were just unburying all over the place and you're so mobile, and like, I couldn't get to any of the markers. And I think I lost 5-1 in the end, but, he's not good at getting to far away places. I don't ever take things like Breakthrough with him.
How do you find him in, so you said Corrupted Idols, but how do you find him in Plant Explosives?
That's not too bad. You know, he can get to the center of the board and you just need to get over it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To be honest, that's not one that's come up a lot in my games, which is unfortunate because it's one of my favorite strategies. But no, he tends to anything that kind of where he has to create an area and sort of hold that area, he's really good at that. So I find he's fine with Harness the Ley Lines because that's center line, Reckoning he's great at, because, you know, once you've got Staggered and the Curse upgrades happening, his damage output is huge. Like, he has the Hanged, and Jack, I think, like, if you've got Staggered and his trigger means he's going to be a min 4 when he's damaging you, so yeah, he can really shunt out the damage. He's great in Reckoning.
Are there any, like, cheeky little plays or tricks you use with him?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. That's one of the things that's so enjoyable about him, is there's a lot of little, because they're slow, and push his own models around, and Montrez's kind of obey tormented models. But the cool thing is, when you put a curse upgrade on someone, they get the tormented keywords. So I think Montrez can't obey them. That's friendly tormented only. But Jack can start moving people around as well. That's a great thing. And the other thing, which I've only just recently started to get to work, was using the guilty can count as an enemy tormented. So abilities that would only work on an enemy, you can use on the, so Jack and the Hanged have, what is it called? Hang on one sec. Jack and the Hanged have on your heels. So they can port around to the guilty. That's one of the really cool tricks you can do. I mean, you'll damage them in the process, but yeah.
Well, they're kind of meant for dying, right? To a degree.
Yeah, because when they die, they put a cursed upgrade on whoever killed them, and it also size by one. So, well, you can be really cheeky with them. You know, you can push them into areas and get them doing stuff. They're almost daring your opponent to kill them.
Yeah.
If you kill them, my hand size is going to increase.
Yeah, and you get another one back, right, when it dies?
Yeah, if you kill the model that killed them, then the guilty comes back on two wounds, I think.
Okay, that's not as horrendous as I thought. I thought they came back fully healed.
No, they come back with two wounds.
Cool. So as an outcast player, I've got half an eye on him. He's just not really my playstyle. I prefer cruiser, sort of spread out and move really fast, and he stays in a bubble and goes really slowly.
Yeah, there definitely is that.
Let's be honest, Rich, you prefer crews that are led by a master called Tara.
I mean, yeah, to be fair.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I've Harai recently, and that was so different. Like, having that mobility, suddenly I was like, oh my God, I can go places and do things. but yeah, I don't think it takes away the fun with Jackdaw. He's very fun. You just need to figure out what he can and can't do.
Yeah.
And play to that.
Like we said, that's half the fun, I guess, of the current state of the game at the moment, is it's all a bit of a discovery.
Yeah.
And everyone's learning.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Tom, favorite master and why?
So, I mean, I played most of the 10 Thunders masters during the beta. Since then, I've only really played two. We are attempting the Schemes and Stones 4G challenge at the moment between the four of us. And I'm using Asami for that, but without a doubt, my favourite master still at the moment is Mei Feng, because she's just everything I always wanted her to be. The problem with Mei Feng, and Mei Feng is the first model I bought in second edition, the first model I painted in second edition, or first crew at least, and there was all this stuff on her card that seemed amazing fun, the whole sort of combo master type thing, this maneuverability. And it never quite worked out that way. And now, with third edition, she finally does what I've always wanted to be, which is just run in and hit stuff hard. The crew is mobile in completely stupid ways. It's a very thematic way, in that they are very mobile to places they've already been, as if they've been laying train tracks where they go. So they're not, I still don't think they're great at things like breakthrough, although they can do it. And surprising models can do it, but the crew as itself is just so, that ability to ride the rails and just place instead of taking a walk.
I think, Tom, you just touched on one of the things I think like makes M3E so great at the moment, is some of the crews, how they've captured the sort of the essence of the theme into like game mechanics is just incredible. Yeah. I think like Mei Feng's a great example. Jack again was another good example of where it's just sort of this, like, weighs you down with sins and executes you, like drains you, like drains you through attrition of your cards. Parker, Tara, like, there's so many great thematic crews at the moment.
Parker's one
that's
of my.
That's one of the reasons why I love it.
Parker's one of my favorite thematic.
I think Parker, like, if you had to pick Master that they made, that, like, the, how the theme translates into his mechanics is, like, I don't think it could be more perfect. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Done.
Keep going.
No, I think,
He looks like a lot of fun, I've got to say. Tempting me to Outcasts for my fifth faction.
And fifth master? Sixth master?
No, I've got most of the Guild ones, half of the Neverborn ones.
As you were saying, Jim, that sort of thematic feel about the cruise has got me so excited. And I'm in this horrible position where I've kind of been Ten Thunders all the while, and I would kind of like to branch out into other things. I'm looking at Bayou going, okay, I've got a couple of crews now for that. Still on the sprue, but, you know, it's something I could
do. Start.
Yeah. And there's so much I want to play all at once that I just want to quit my job and become a full-time Malifaux player.
But it's something you can do, right? You can say, oh, I see this scheme pool. Now I'm going to announce the faction that, like, if I see something really, really sort of schemey based, I might announce my faction as Arcanists because I'm going to use Colette.
Yeah. I thought you were implying that I could quit my job and become a full-time Malifaux player, which...
Do it! Do it! Go for it!
You can actually do that.
Malifaux player.
You can definitely quit your job and become a full-time Malifaux player.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I can't pay my rent at the same time.
Yeah, the quality of the rest of your life might fall into disarray, but you can definitely do that. That's definitely an option.
Okay, I'll make a note of that. Yeah. Can do, probably shouldn't.
Sorry, so any other reasons why Mayfeng is really doing it for you at the moment, Tom?
I don't know. I've always loved the sculpt of it. I've loved the idea of Mayfeng, this sort of really sort of self-serving character. She's just trying to stay alive, and yeah, I totally buy into her caught between two basically criminal organizations. Both manipulating her and her trying just to keep on with it. And then you've got things like I love the Bayou parts of the Foundry keyword as well.
That's cool.
I've just today put together Sparks and the Survivors. I'm really looking forward to getting them on the table because who doesn't love Gremlins, really? We play other factions, but we all kind of go, I wish I was little random green guys.
No! I wish Gremlins didn't exist. Honestly, if I could take one thing about Malifaux and change it, would be to remove the Bayou faction because I feel like it ruins everything.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You're
controversial.
Mean. You're mean after you've drunk gin.
So that being said, I'm assuming you're not playing any Bayou, Jim. What are you?
He's eating a kebab,
I
think.
My burger down.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, burger.
Didn't time that well.
We timed it perfectly. We've been...
Yeah.
It arrived sooner than I expected. Yeah. Well, I've only really played one master since third launched, which is Lady Justice. Always, I think she was my first master, because again, got drawn in by that, oh, hey, these are sort of flaming skull-headed, flaming skull-headed US Marshals. That's fairly tempting. Oh, led by a blind woman with a massive sword. Yeah, cool. Okay. And then obviously for a lot of second edition, she didn't really do very well. And then all of a sudden they went, hey, here's an upgrade that allows her to leap. And in third edition, thankfully, they've built that in core on the card because once it was released in second edition, it might as well have been on the card. Nobody was not taking that leap. So, I don't think she's my favourite. I think my favourite's going to be Pandora, because I'm really looking forward to playing Pandora and not being hated by everybody.
yeah.
But she still plays like Pandora. She still plays the way she should, but just less obnoxiously.
I think that's across the board in M3, isn't it? Like, a lot of the obnoxiousness has been turned down.
Yeah. And she's still a pain in the arse, but yeah.
I think, like, removing Paralyze has been
an
amazing...
That's the critical
thing. I was about to say, I've played against Colette and had a model buried, I think injured, distracted, and staggered, and probably wow. stunned as well. It was like every condition under, and it still felt better than being paralyzed. Because at least I could do one thing. Even though I was going to unbury wherever my opponent chose for me to unbury, it was still better than just, yeah, you lose your turn.
Great. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so it's Justice that I've actually been playing. Yeah, enjoying it. The loss of the melee 7 is, it hurts. It really hurts. I think both in my game against you, Tom, and the one against you, Luke, she did amazing stuff right at the start. She went smashy, smashy, and then whiffed utterly because you just haven't got that reliability. It's more about sheer number of attacks. If you can get those mask triggers, you want to throw her in against several people, use the mask trigger to hit one person, then instantly hit the next one.
I don't think she in your game against me, I don't think she killed anything. She came in and she wailed on a Goryeo.
I think she killed the Goryeo, didn't she? She killed something. And then she utterly whipped, like her second turn, she didn't do a damn thing, despite it being my first activation and me having, you know, a full hand of cards.
Yeah.
She utterly failed to do anything. So I think what I've learned with her is she is really resource intensive. You want the stone so that she can, do a leap with a free attack, and then you're still going to need the right card in hand for it as well. And then you're wanting those triggers on the attacks. And so she's going to drain several stones and cards out of your hand every turn. And she'll do a lot with it if you do it right. Mm. But
she's got, I'm just checking that I've got, she's got I can't remember the name of the trigger, the mass trigger to attack again. Is that right?
Yeah, but a different target.
Different, the one that attacks a different target. Okay.
But if it was the same target, I think I'd be like, oh yeah, no, this is fine. But
same target is Onslaught, right?
Yeah.
I think, cause I had the real shock when we played recently, Jim, and you went, oh yeah, she's only melee 6 now. Oh, okay. Cause last time I played against her in the beta, she was still melee 7. And yeah, she just was just wiping out whatever she wanted. And that one change, she's still got the potential there to get off 7 attacks in a turn. At minimum 3, probably with a positive to the damage flip. She's still got the potential there to do horrendous amounts of damage.
Oh yes.
And I think that's the payoff, and that feels okay.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. I'm not, I'm certainly not saying that she's rubbish, because she is not that. But it's taking me a little while to get used to the fact that I cannot rely on her to hit more often than not unless I'm throwing resources into it.
Or picking a lower value target. Lower defense target.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the crew overall, liking them. I want to get more out of the judge in terms of that crow trigger to generate soul stones, because if Lady Justice is chewing through soul stones, what you really want is a henchman who's going to come along, finish somebody off, and generate more soul stones for you. So I think if I can get that really going, that's going to work nicely. Had an interesting game against Luke, against Kirai and her Umami, or what is it?
Urami.
That's the one.
Umami.
Interesting game there. I think Corrupted Idols could be a really good game for the Marshall crew for a number of reasons. Partly they got the resilience and the healing. And also if you put a recruiter near somebody, like an exorcist or something, they, you know, take all the damage throwing Corrupted Idols around. And when they die, if they're near the recruiter, they turn into a death model. And so you're like, great, I've died, and here's another model. And they're going to be there ready to do it next turn.
I think so, the exorcists are amazing 6 stone models to bring against Karai or any summoner. Yeah. Or any Reza, you know, they're kind of, yeah, they're, was it ignoring incorporeal,
and hard to wound, is it? Hard to kill?
They also kill anyone with the summon upgrade, which happened.
As long as they get the trigger, yeah.
Yeah. I think in that game, I summoned, I You know, Karai takes damage from her summons activating. Mm-hmm. She didn't actually take any damage that game because James killed every single one of my summons before I got to activate them.
There's an interesting thing from the beta that I, in one of the games I played against you, Jim, we played Lady J versus Misaki, and as soon as the game finished, Misaki actually did nothing in that game. But as soon as the game finished, you pointed at her and went, "She is terrifying." And that's, actually, she did more by the fear of what she could do than what she actually did. And it's, I think, the same thing with the executioners. When I played you with Asami the other week, it's those sort of models make you go, "Oh God, I've got to get to that model. I've got to hit that hard and quickly."
Executioner or exorcist?
Executioner. Exorcist. Mm. And it's the same with the jury has got a similar trigger, as haven't they? And I found in our game, I wanted to get rid of Lady J quickly and then get onto those models. But I just couldn't get, I got caught up. I had so many high priority targets that I couldn't focus one down.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm enjoying it. I think the crew's definitely, as I think they all probably are, it's better as a thematic crew than all of the ones in M2E, certainly than the M2E version of the Lady J crew. Yeah, yeah. Enjoying it, but I think Pandora is probably going to be the one. Partly because I just like painting the fancy colours. Guild I enjoy, but there's a lot of red and grey in there. And I've got a big pink teddy bear instead, waiting to hug people. So that'll be next time round.
Rich, what's your favourite master thus far?
All right, at the start of the beta, for those that don't know, I've got a bit of a rep for playing almost exclusively Tara. And at the start of the beta, I swore that I wasn't going to be playing Tara. However, I have now defaulted to... So I went through most of the beta without playing her, and then a couple of weeks before it all closed up, I sort of got into playing her again. And I think the changes she'd gone through were amazing, and I think she's come out in both a really fluffy thematic spot and also like a hugely competitive spot. I think she's possibly... The more I play her, the better she gets, the more little tricks I'm learning. I think if she's not the best outcast master, she's up there and she's giving the others a run for their money. The mobility of that crew is insane. And I think, like I said, the more you play it and the more little quirky tricks you can figure out, the better you're going to be with it. I keep concocting new ways of, unburying models in ridiculous places, and you can just teleport entire crews to different areas of the board. She is very strong. And I think, again, like similar to Jackdaw, I think if you haven't played against her, she's one of those masters that's going to catch you out to start with. That being said, I think, Jim, you're going to be good because I think she will suck into Guild. Lady Justice and most of those models are going to shut her crew down. So you're probably...
Being able to attack buried models.
Yeah.
I mean, Tom's talking about Misaki there.
she
will not enjoy me attacking buried models.
Yeah, and that's the main premise of the crew. So, what I'm learning is I can send a model in, hit, do some damage, it takes some hits, and then I can just pull it straight back out, bury it, heal it up, pop it out somewhere else to attack something else. And just being able to spread the wounds around the crew is huge. And then summoning in new models as well. She's mobile and tanky, and just very fast and hard to pin down, which I think is probably what makes a good crew in M3E at the moment, because a lot of them is about getting to an area of the board and controlling that and then moving on, which I think she does very, very well. It's also just, it's incredibly fluffy. You've got Karina walking around, like opening holes in the void and creatures pouring out and attacking stuff, like sending other models into the void. Yeah, it's just cool. Just really, really cool. That being said, my second love will be Parker. And again, he's super fluffy and also a really competitive spot now, I think. It takes a certain scheme pool, and I think his thematic models aren't necessarily the best. I think you're going to end up taking a lot of versatile models with him, but he feels cool.
Like Prospectors.
like prospectors.
Should we?
So Rich is like nearly against Rich in beta and since release has fielded dual prospectors. Do you want to talk about that, Rich, at all?
No, I'm good. I'm good. nothing wrong with prospectors. They're perfectly balanced. Please don't change them.
I think Luke wishes to speak about that. So go ahead, Luke. What are your thoughts on prospectors?
I don't know. I think they're as bad as like I initially did when I first the two of them, the sheer amount of soul stones they can generate is huge. But someone pointed out to me that that's kind of really all they do. I don't know.
Yeah.
See, I would disagree. I think the more they're similar to Tara. I think the more I play with prospectors, the more I realize they can actually do. They are winning me games. I think what it's leading me to is creating quite henchman heavy crews. And you clocked this the other day, Luke. The amount of soul stones you can generate just means that despite them being nowhere near a master or a henchman, they're giving those models extra life. Parker, Mad Dog, Tara, Aeonus, just going way longer than they have any right to do.
Yeah, it makes them really hard to kill. I killed Tara the other day, didn't I? But I had to kill both prospectors first.
Yeah.
And that was the game I lost 5-1. So it was like I spent all my time doing that instead of actually scoring points.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, what's the most soul stones you've generated with them?
I think, so just from them, I think I've got 13 in a game. Maybe more. No, probably more. I think I've got 15.
That's 2 6-point models, is it?
Yeah.
So they've made the cost back plus one.
Plus 3, I think. I think I've got 15 from just them. 15. I think I've got, in plus a part, I think I've got maybe 18 from Parker stealing soul stones as well.
So they make their cost back plus more.
Yeah.
But they also draw a lot of cards as well.
They draw so many cards. And that's the thing as well. That's why I like running two with Parker. Because Parker's stealing your opponent's cards and then generating additional cards. If you take Pride's stealing your opponent's card. He's taking cards out of your opponent's hand. And then the prospectors are generating you more cards and soul stones to also then get more cards. And what I'm finding is I'm reducing my opponents to hand to nothing. And then I can just use sort of like, I can cheat in sevens, eights. And I'm drawing lots of severes as well over the course of the game. And I'll probably get maybe 12 plus cards through my, you know, through my hand in that game. So my card quality is great. And it just, you could, although everything in the crew is stat 5, you win a lot of duels just naturally by being able to cheat in the better cards you've drawn because your opponent's got nothing left to cheat with.
Yeah. I've definitely realized playing against them that they're actually a high priority target early on.
And that's of all the, my win rate with Tara is actually quite good. I've been keeping a bit of a tracker and the games I've lost are the games where people have gone hell for leather at the prospectors.
Yeah.
Not to give my little tricks away.
So, Brewmaster's Table giving high level strategy there. Go for the prospectors.
Kill prospectors, they're amazing.
Maybe we could talk a bit about some of the new sculpts that we're excited about. Is there anything that anyone is really looking forward to getting?
Lynch, I'm going to get another new faction. One of the reasons I got Neverborn in the first place was because Lynch was in the faction. And I was always like, yeah, I want that one. And now he's not in the Neverborn, so I'm going to have to chase him into the Ten Thunders faction. And that new artwork looks pretty damn good.
So for me, I think the Vix got a bit of hate online, but I just think they're really cool. I think they're a lot more dynamic. They look like they're actually fighting now instead of sort of posing for FHA.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's the Von Stuck crew.
Oh, they are beautiful.
Yeah, they look amazing. And the new Molly looks really cool.
The Nightmare.
Or
the new one.
Ridiculous.
No, both of them. Like the new Molly sculpt looks really good. And the Nightmare edition looks amazing. So I might end up with 3 Mollies, even though I rarely play Molly.
See, Molly is someone in Resurrection I'd like to pick up at some point. And I really like the Nightmare crew, but I really like Molly as a character, and the Nightmare crew is a different character. I have the same problem with the circus thing, in that I really like Colette, and I really like the circus one, but I like the theme of Colette more. Yeah.
I don't tend to buy a lot of the alts. I tend to kind of stick with the original models. Although the alt Seamus, I've forgotten the name that's coming out.
Miss Gen Con.
Yes.
But she looks amazing.
Mm. Interesting question here. Nekema got a limited edition model fairly recently. And that's the same artwork as is now sort of showing up on the website. Do we think that's going to get packaged in as the new standard Nekema in her crew box?
She has new art now.
Has she?
Yeah.
She's got new art, but it's the new art that goes with the limited edition model.
No, it's different, isn't it?
I don't think it is.
I don't think we've seen the new artwork, because the new art will come in the Neverborn book. So unless you've seen that.
No, it's
on the website.
But it is the one that matches the alt sculpt. And likewise, I'm wondering if the new Lynch will include alt Hungering Darkness, or if it'll be another new sculpt.
It won't.
No, the Nekema. Sorry, how do you pronounce it? I always call her Nekema.
I would say Nekema.
See, I say Nekema.
I can accept either are possible, depending on what sort of language you're taking the.
Well, yeah, the old Nekema that came out a while back looks similar to the new version of her, the new artwork that comes out, but the pose is different. So a brand new sculpt. I think this is the best version of Nekema that I've seen. I think this is the one I like the most out of all the previous sculpts.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I've got the worst one, the bikini one.
Do you know what? I love the I really like the new morning artwork.
Oh yeah.
A lot of people saying, "Oh, but he looks younger," and I was like, "Yeah, but you know, plastic surgery and all that."
Yeah, justify that.
But yeah, I don't know. He looks really good now. But it's a weird one. I kind of like. I don't know which I prefer. Like, I don't. I'll probably get both, to be honest.
Yeah, they're both great.
I've just looked up the artwork for the new Nekema.
Yeah.
And while it's clearly the same person as the alt, I think that's very different. I think that's going to be a new sculpt.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's a completely different pose.
What? This is the thing I was just going to bring up just on the last one on that subject. What do you guys think about the losing the upgrades off masters but gaining the titles?
You mean the what they were talking about maybe as a future release?
Yeah, it's actually in the rule book that they're. If you look it up, there are titles in the rulebook. So instead of... It doesn't specifically mention Masters, but this is what I believe it's going to be talking about, is that idea of you'll have, you know, Rasputina Master of Christmas, and it's based on the sort of alternate box for Rasputina. You might have different card for Rasputina rather than having upgrades for her.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I think I like the... I like the tidying up of the upgrades. Like, they're much less common, but they've still got a place. And yeah, I can definitely see, like, I'd love to see a different version of Dreamer back to the earlier version, the kid, you know, not the teenager with the not baseball bat, cricket bat.
Yeah. Be more British.
Yes. Yeah. So, I love that idea, but it should be able to be done in such a way that there's no obvious one to take. Whereas with upgrades, so often it was like, well, you'll always take this. You'll usually take this one because you're upgrading a single master with a variety of upgrades, and there will always be one that works out better. If you've got two different versions of the same master, I think you can balance that a lot better.
Yeah, I'm glad the masses of master up. Like, there were so many, because I never knew what half of them did, especially my opponents. So you face an opponent and they go, okay, so I'm playing this master with this, this, and this. And you'd be like, cool, don't know what any of that does. So, especially at a tournament, there's no time to explain or for you to read the cards or have a look. So you just play it and like, you just see what comes. But I think if you've got an individual master card that's different, you'll associate to remember what the different ones do. Like, you know, if you're going against Christmas Rasputina, you're like, oh, I know, yeah, that's Christmas Rasputina. She does this specific thing. I think, especially with a visual, it will be easier to remember as well.
Yeah. I think something like Sonya Creed, with or without the mask, Seems like an obvious one.
Shameless Wibble without the hat.
Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Tonight's music was courtesy of Purple Planet Music, and the over-opinionated nonsense was courtesy of Jim, Luke, Rich, and Tom. Hope to see you back soon.
I was going to do a sort of talking a bit about our game background, but then I remembered that no one gives a shit. You are not wearing any pants.
I'm not wearing dress.
Okay. If you hear an ice cream van, Jim's just gone.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, I'm all right. I get my gelato delivered.